afternoon. You are tuned in to Juno Afternoon here for Tuesday, the 10th of January, the year 2017. I'm Jeff Brown. I'm hosting the show today. Today we'll be talking with Rory Rott and Eric Erickson about emerging energy technology. Julie Diana will be here to highlight the upcoming auditions for Juno's Got Talent. Lori Wilson will give us an update about Red Cross activities, and we'll get details about this week's Mud Rooms. That Writer's Almanac, Murder Note Music Award today on Juno Afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight, mostly clear skies with low temperatures around 15 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, a 30% chance of snow after 3 in the afternoon. Mostly sunny skies, however, with high temperatures near 28 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. When two severely malnourished and abused girls were found on the Pine Ridge Reservation last November, community members near and far gathered to take action. Jim Kent reports on work by the newly formed Embracing Our Children's Health Group.
Founder Patty Puyer says members are determined to make the organization an action-based group.
You know, there can be tons of meetings, but if nothing ever happens, it's pretty useless.
Puyer consulted with cultural anthropologist Dr. Albert Linderman regarding his work with Rapid City Collective Impact, a group created to address specific social problems in the South Dakota city on a long-term basis. Embracing Our Children's Health is establishing collective action forums to bring Pine Ridge Children's Services together and determine how actions by one impact actions by another. Safe houses for children are being created in each of the reservation's 9 districts, and a Caring for Relatives program will have volunteers acting as local resources in communities for parents, programs, and health services. Embracing Our Children's Health is also about to start intensive training for foster parents in conjunction with the Oglala Sioux Tribe's Child Protection Services. Puyer acknowledges that the Indian Child Welfare Act does exist to protect Native children from being taken from the reservation and losing all identity with their culture.
Having said that, it's also important for people to know that you can be a foster parent to a Native child as long as there is a community of Natives within the area that you're fostering that child.
Patty Puyer says the ultimate goal is to make children feel comfortable with who they are, to be free of shame, and to be proud that they're Lakota. I'm Jim Kent.
An Arizona congressman says President Obama will not create a national monument on public land surrounding Grand Canyon National Park. Tribes and conservation groups were hoping for the designation in the final days of Obama's presidency. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
Democratic Congressman Raul Grijalva says he met with officials from the White House Council on Environmental Quality last week. They told him the president won't use his powers under the Antiquities Act to declare the Greater Grand Canyon Heritage National Monument. Grijalva is a supporter of the proposal to protect 1.7 million acres near the park and says he's disappointed with the decision. Monument supporters also include conservationists and tribes who say the designation would protect the area's environment and watershed from uranium mining. Arizona Governor Doug Ducey, along with several other Arizona Republicans and both the state's U.S. senators, opposed the monument. The White House has not commented on the decision. President Obama recently announced the creation of 2 national monuments in the Southwest. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
The presidents of tribal colleges in North Dakota discussed priorities with state leaders last week. United Tribes Technical College President Leander Russ McDonald was among them and says securing funding from the state for non-Native students who attend tribal institutions is a consensus among the schools. Tribal colleges are also in need of support for workforce development programs. Turtle Mountain Community College is seeking those funds from the state. McDonald says talks with Governor Doug Burgum were positive. He says Burgum visited tribal colleges prior to his election in November.
The governor supports education at all levels from K-12 to post-secondary. He recognizes the need for workforce development, so skill-building piece and points of credentials in regard to the workforce needs for the state.
Tribal colleges are also seeking funding on a national level. McDonald says they're looking at maintaining budgets as well as securing forward funding.
Tribal colleges play an important role providing education that would not be otherwise provided for their communities, especially at the reservation level.
There are 5 tribal colleges in North Dakota. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes like National Native News. Just select KNBA-FM Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you're on tune to Juneau Afternoon. Our first guest in the studio, Eric Erickson from AELB and the Chamber of Commerce, and also City Manager Rory Watt. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having us, Jeff. I was happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks.
So today you're talking about energy, emerging energy technology. It's a mouthful of words there. Can you describe what's happening?
Yep. On Thursday night, we're having another one of our energy forums at the Assembly Chambers, 5:30. This is one in a series of events that we've had, real popular. We've had great attendance throughout the fall. I think this is our sixth one. And on this one, we're going to be focusing on emerging energy technologies, and we have a special guest courtesy of the power company.
Yes, Josh Kraft. First of all, I'd just like to say this is exciting. Anytime we talk about Alaska is awesome. Anytime I get to talk about energy, it's awesome. So now we're talking about Alaskan energy. That's epic. So when I think of Alaska and the spirit and the culture, I think of innovation. And Alaska has been pioneering innovation in energy for Alaska Electric Light and Power for over 100 years, and we are today. And that's really what this program is about, that the state generated back in 2010. It was to create more energy sources for the state. And so in 2010, the state appropriated some funds to develop, they call it Emerging Energy Technology Fund. You might associate it with like an angel investment kind of fund. Basically, there's an RFP process. The public brings forward ideas, energy project ideas that they can develop and bring to market within 5 years was the goal. And so all these people throughout Alaska and other places bring forward ideas. There's a criteria. They get reviewed. And if they have a great idea that has a business plan, there's a grant opportunity for them that the state's provided. So Josh Kraft is the manager for this program, current manager, and he's going to be coming down. Alaska Electric Light and Power sponsored him to come down and have this opportunity to speak at Chamber at noon on Thursday at the Moose Lodge, and then again at the Energy Forum at 5:30 at City Hall.
And is it open to the public?
Yes, certainly. Everybody's intended. This is something that everybody will be interested in. It's exciting. The spectrum of ideas that people have brought forth since 2010 has been very wide.
What's out there as far as energy is concerned? Now there's hydro, and there's a little bit of wind power, and there's heat pumps. What's out there that people are
in? Well, I mean, energy's there's a broad spectrum of what you mean by that. Some of that includes generation sources of energy. Other aspects are actually how you can use that energy and efficiency methods and stuff. And one of the programs that the state's making a priority right now is actually microgrid, and so they're looking at in small communities where they have developed natural resources, whether it's wind or even investigate solar or hydro through river generation or other sources, it can be challenging to integrate those renewable resources into a small community. A microgrid is simply a technology term to try and understand and use technology to leverage that integration. So that's some of the current projects that the state's looking at through this third round that is undergoing right now. So there's been three rounds of grant applications and funding. The third round has back in December, around the 21st of December, we reviewed some of the final applicants in a business presentation. And then that third round should have an award fairly soon, and Josh will be talking about those projects.
Is this rocket science?
It is.
It's proposed rocket science.
Proposed rocket science. There's been the ideas are just, sometimes it's like, wow, where'd somebody come in with that? That's awesome. And so the fund has an advisory committee, which I sit on representing Alaska Utilities. But there's several other members that have a science background or a business background. And some of it is to simply understand the science between the idea and whether it's actually scientifically feasible. And in many cases, there may be even some uncertainty that maybe it's new science that hasn't quite been proven yet. So some of the grant may be simply to further along some science, as in fuel cell technology and things like that. But there's been ideas where we've had balloons being flown up into the stratosphere to capture wind currents up in the higher atmospheres to power energy. And we have a lot of river generation projects, solar projects. There's small things. There was one project that I remember calling recently a presentation on. It was just the scale of it was, a device that sits in your chimney of your cabin on your wood stove to generate and the power to power up some receptacle or maybe a device like your phone or something like that.
Eric, you talked about how ALMP is involved. Rory, what's the city's stake in this?
So the city has a draft energy plan that we've been working on for a while, and the Commission on Sustainability has been working on that plan. And as part of that, in August, we decided to do a bunch of public outreach and hold these energy forums. We've had one on standby power generation that was really popular, one on electric cars. We had one on the proposed district heat project. We heard from the Sweetheart proposal. We had a great presentation.
What's the Sweetheart proposal?
The hydro project from Juneau Hydropower. We had one from the power company about how they invest in infrastructure maintenance. And every one has been really well attended by the public. I mean, people are really interested in energy from an economic standpoint, from a public policy standpoint. So when Eric pitched the idea that the power company is willing to fund Josh from the Alaska Energy Authority to come down to talk about emerging energy technology, I was pretty sure that would be really interesting to the public and that we would get good attendance.
It's going to blow your mind away that things are going on around our state. It's amazing how great our state is and being innovative and leading, and energy is just another example of that.
What are some of the ones that are, you mentioned the hot air balloons in the atmosphere. What else is out there that people wouldn't think of when they think of energy generation?
Well, a lot of the studies that have been, or the proposals that have been brought forth, have been around river generation or ocean generation. A lot of our communities in Alaska are around a river. They may not necessarily be on the ocean front. And so there's been a lot of interest in that as another kind of a type of hydro generation. Wind is a big one. Wind, obviously, the different types of turbines, orchestrating the location of those turbines, and even just efficiencies and how many you have and how they're positioned to help leverage themselves. There's studies around that. And then the integration of that energy. Again, a wind resource may not be a constant or steady resource, or it may not fit your demand very well. So the supply of energy may not fit the demand, and so you got to be able to manage that. And sometimes that's through batteries or flywheel technologies. So there's a lot of proposals on that kind of energy storage systems. There's a lot of neat things.
How big of an issue is storage?
For renewable resources, especially in smaller communities, it's very big. That's probably one of the largest challenges to integrating renewable resources to a smaller community.
What about nuclear power?
Nuclear power certainly is something that's been reviewed in the state. I don't particularly recall if there was a proposal for nuclear power, but I know there has been those proposals within the state and programs. I don't recall specifically if that one is a current one for this program.
And there's a forum this Thursday night at the Assembly Chambers.
5:30 at the Assembly Chambers. Everybody's welcome.
Anything you want to add? I forgot to ask.
No, I think it's great that we've had a good community focus on energy issues. It takes a lot of the money out of our pockets, whether it's individual or family pockets or city pockets, and I think it's really important that we get people educated and informed and we make good decisions about energy consumption and use.
I just had one other thing to add. I just wanted to, one of the reasons why I felt people were really going to find some ownership in this presentation too is because a lot of the proposals actually have come from people either here locally within Juneau or within Southeast. So Josh is going to be able to share some of the things that people are working on right here in our town or in Southeast that you know, as a general public, we may not actually be aware of.
5:30 at the Assembly Chambers on Thursday. Thanks for coming by.
Yep. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Thank you.
About 19 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned in to a Juneau Afternoon. Our next guest in the studio is Julie Diana from the Juneau Dance Theater. Here to talk about upcoming auditions for Juneau's Got Talent.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
So last year you had a bit of a success.
Yes, so last year was the first ever Juneau's Got Talent, and it was a wild success. We were so happy to see the community come together in that way, and it was just a really wonderful platform for a lot of local artists who maybe don't perform around town very often to get out there and showcase, you know, their talents, and it was really nice to see. So, yeah, last year's event sold out. We had people waiting outside the Jack around the corner down the street, and then unfortunately we had to turn them away because there was no more room in there. So we're hoping to recreate that excitement this year and that experience, and I think it's going to be great.
What kind of talent was out there?
Oh, last year we had, well, there's so many different kinds of auditioning. The finalists, we had everything from bucket drumming and martial arts to beatboxing, dancing, all kinds of dance, from tap to belly dance. We had singers. It was really quite a unique experience in that way, that it was such a diverse group of people coming together. And so we have auditions this year coming up, January 28th at Juno Dance Theater. So tomorrow we're starting sign-ups online. So you could go to our website, which is junodance.org, and you can sign up if you're interested to audition for the event.
Are you going to have the three celebrities judge the people?
We will have a panel of local celebrity judges, as we did last year. Very friendly, very positive. There's no Simon Cowell type that we've recruited. So we're very excited about that. And then the audience also participates by acting as another judge in a way. So they get to vote and participate, and their votes count as well. So that helps to determine the winners of the competition.
And how many acts did you have last year?
Last year we had 10 finalists. We had a lot of people audition, and because of the length of the show, we can only have so many people performing, but we did have about 10 last year. And depending on, the type of talent that auditions this year, we'll have to see how many we have, but probably somewhere around there.
How many people have submitted interest?
Sign-ups start tomorrow. So we've had a lot of people calling in, asking about details, and very anxious to get their names on the sheet. So we'll see. We're accepting sign-ups through January 28th, the day of the audition. So starting tomorrow and all the way up through the 28th, yep, you could just go to our site or call the office and we'll help direct you. Our office line is 463-5327, and our website is junodance.org.
How long is each act?
I'm sorry?
How long are the acts?
So each act, we're looking for about 2 to 3 minutes for each act. And then for the event itself, potentially a little bit longer, but for the auditions, we're really looking for just 2 to 3 minutes. And if people can't make the actual live audition on the 28th, we are accepting video submissions. So you can sign up online, and then you can send a video of what you would intend to do to our email, which is junodance@gci.net. And all that information will be on our website, too.
Who was the winner last year?
The winner last year was the incredible Jocelyn Miles, and she was fabulous. So not only do the winners receive cash prizes, but the winner also has the opportunity to perform at our spring performance series at JDHS. So Jocelyn was our guest artist for that performance series, and it was just so wonderful to have her on stage with our dancers and her live accompany us. So, yeah, so the winner has an opportunity to perform even more, and also the cash prizes and just the excitement of the evening. It was just really, I think, one of our favorite parts of it was just seeing so many different parts of the community come together to support the arts, support each other in a way like that, which was really remarkable.
And when is the big event itself?
The big event itself is Saturday, March 11th at the JAC. So that's when the finalists will be performing, and it's going to be a great time.
How should people prepare for the audition?
So we either have seen in the past polished pieces come through, and we've also seen, for example, the third place winner last year, Micah Mendy. He was a young boy, I think he was only 9, and he came in with his dad, and his dad said, well, he doesn't really have an act necessarily, but he's got this incredible talent. Do you want to see it? And he just brought in some buckets and he did some drumming, and then he just stood up and started working through some of his martial arts. The judges could see the talent that was there, and he became a finalist and ended up, winning third place in the competition. So you don't necessarily have to have a polished piece for the audition. We just want to see you and what your excitement is and your talent.
Did the amount of talent that was displayed surprise you?
Yes. Well, yes and no. I mean, the longer I'm here in Juneau, the more I'm seeing that everybody in town seems to have different hats that they wear. And, they're constantly surprising me with the things that they're also doing artistically. And so it is. It's wonderful to see people come in who you might not expect to have this incredible voice or this amazing ability to move in a certain way. Or, we're looking for storytellers. We're looking for poets. We're looking for just all kinds of family-friendly performing artists, jugglers, stand-up comics. I mean, you don't have to be a singer or a dancer to participate. It could just be something that you feel passionate about doing.
If you're a singer, do you need to bring a backup musician or a tape with you?
Or you could just do it a cappella. So we're really flexible. If you prefer having a CD, or we have a keyboard that someone can come in and accompany as well. But we're really flexible and supportive and positive. And we'll work with people who come in.
Is there a phone number people could call?
Yes, 463-5327. And our website, once again, is junodance.org. And the sign-ups will be open starting tomorrow. So we encourage people to go online and do it that way as well.
Julie, Diana, thank you so much. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I just want to add that this is a major fundraising effort for our organization, and it helps support our programs and our outreach efforts in the community. And that's another great reason for why we're putting this show on.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you so much for having me.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 10th of January, 2017. It's the anniversary of the day, 1901. The first oil gusher erupted at Spindletop just outside Beaumont, Texas, the beginning of the age of petroleum. Until then, most of the oil came from Pennsylvania, and oil and petroleum were used mostly for lamps. But suddenly, with Spindletop, oil became the cheapest fuel, just about 3 cents a barrel. A man named Patillo Higgins thought there was oil there, and he enlisted a Croatian oil explorer named Anthony Lucas. They started drilling in late 1900. Hit a depth of about 1,200 feet, natural gas started shooting out of the ground, followed by crude oil. A gusher, 200 feet straight up in the air. And it was the beginning of the great Texas oil fortunes. Within the year, the town of Beaumont went from 8,000 to 60,000 people. It was on this day in 49 BC that Julius Caesar crossed the Rubicon River and launched a civil war. He had conquered most of Western Europe all the way to Britain, but back in Rome, his political alliances were falling apart. His fellow consul Pompey had turned against him, and so had the Roman Senate. The Rubicon River formed the border of the Roman Republic, and according to Roman law, if a general brought his army into the Republic from the provinces, he would be considered a traitor. And so Caesar got to the river with his army, made up his mind, said, Alea iacta est, the die is cast, and came into the city. And crossing the Rubicon became a phrase meaning past the point of no return. It's the birthday of the historian Stephen Ambrose, born in Lovington, Illinois, 1936, son of a Navy doctor during World War II. Family followed him from post to post and then overseas. The war ended. The father came home, took up a private practice in Wisconsin. Stephen Ambrose was a pre-med student, and in his sophomore year, he took an American history class based on biographies of individuals. The professor said that the students would be completing their own biography of an unknown Wisconsinite, which they would have to use primary research from the state's historical society to write. Ambrose said, "That just hit me like a sledgehammer. It had never before occurred to me that I could add to the sum of the world's knowledge." He changed his major to history, wrote a 10-page paper on an obscure one-term Wisconsin congressman named Charles Billinghurst, and that's how his career was launched. He became the biographer of Eisenhower. Nixon wrote a best-selling book about the Lewis and Clark expedition, and he wrote around 10 books on World War II, including Citizen Soldiers and Band of Brothers. Here's a poem by Floyd Skloot, Sturgeon Season. They have been there since dawn, their boats side by side mid-river, lines cast downstream into the edge of deep water, sipping coffee as light seeps through naked branches of ash and cottonwood. Now from shadows of limbs and swirling current, a sea lion slithers among their orange anchor buoys and dives. The water, already roiled brown and swollen by rain, is so cold it seems to crack when a cormorant skims the surface before rising toward its island nest. Sturgeon Season by Floyd Skloot from his collection Approaching Winter, published by Louisiana State University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Association of Writers and Writing Programs, celebrating 50 years of support, advocacy, and community. Learn more at awpwriter.org. And by Lumosity, brain training developed by scientists and game designers who turn cognitive research tasks into challenging games. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The University of Alaska Southeast is open for business. Courses in record keeping, QuickBooks, financial accounting, and business management are offered completely online. 2017 is the year for finishing degrees and to increase earning power. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu/som or call 796-6409 to speak with an advisor about spring 2017 registration.
It's about half past the hour, and you are tuned in to Juno Afternoon. Our next guest is Lori Wilson from the American Red Cross Alaska branch here. She's stationed up in Fairbanks, and she's down here to make sure that we're doing okay.
We're trying, yeah.
So it's been a busy year for the American Red Cross, but that's a double-edged sword.
So it's been a very busy year for the Red Cross of Alaska, all over the state of Alaska, and it is a double-edged sword. We would much prefer, as I was telling you, to be busy preparing and training for events, but in this case, we've been busy dealing with and helping with events from home fires all over the state, a very large number, very big increase. We just had two people return from Savunga from the winter storms that hit the west coast out there. And then, of course, fortunately here in Juneau with the avalanche that you experienced, you know, what was it, last week? It was in an area that nobody was affected and nobody was hurt. But as we know in the southeast down here, that's a very real risk factor. And it's that pointing out that we need to be prepared and, you know, we need to know what our plan is for setting up shelters and setting up, you know, making sure everybody's taken care of, because it can happen. Disasters don't have a way of announcing themselves. They just happen, and they tend to catch us off guard. In Fairbanks, we had, you know, severe weather hit with snowstorms and such, you know, so worrying about power outages and people, because it's very cold up there right now. So, you know, there's just all these different things that we have to think about throughout the state of Alaska. We're huge. And so the nature of the disasters is a huge range of. And then, of course, then you have the home fires. And it's been a busy year. This winter it's been cold, so I think people have we've had alternative heating sources. We've had weird things like outlets that have, you know, shorted out. We've had flues that don't open that are inside the walls, and so now you have the fire inside the wall from the furnaces. It's just been a whole nature, whole range of causes, and, you know, just trying to be as safe and prepared as you can. And fortunately, we have great volunteers that have been going out at all hours of the night, holidays, you know, all hours of the morning, day, making sure that people are taken care of, so...
What happens during a disaster, or when you first hear of a disaster, waking up at 2 or 3 in the morning?
Well, for us, a disaster can range from its individual home fire to a large-scale disaster. And so, you know, the Red Cross, you know, our model is designed to be scalable, to go from one to, you know, several hundred, depending upon the nature. So it usually starts out, when it's a home fire, a call from the fire department requesting our services. In Juneau, we're tied into their scanners so we can hear about the fires and can respond quickly, even before they call, knowing that it's a home fire. In other parts of the state, depending on the agreement in relationship with the different fire departments, it could be a phone call from dispatch. So it starts out with that initial notification, however that notification comes, and then we call our volunteers. We have volunteers that take turns being on call. And we call them and ask them, you know, if they're available to go out on a call and take care of the people who are affected. And when they do, that can consist of analyzing and seeing what their needs are. Do they need a place to stay? So do they need money to have a place to stay? What are their immediate emergency needs? Have they lost medication? So do we need to get our healthcare providers involved, volunteers, you know, what is that level of need? And then take care of that immediate need and then start trying to connect them with other resources within the community so that the recovery process can be as painless as possible. I mean, it's a hard process. There's no way to make it easy, but to try and make it as smooth and as easy for them as possible. So that's kind of the process, whether it's one person or several hundred.
And it all comes down to triage.
Yeah, it does. And having volunteers who are willing and ready and able to do it, and making sure they have the training they need to know what to look for and what questions to ask and how to make sure that people are getting and what resources are available to people. So it's a lot of preparation. And, you know, our job as staff is to make sure that our volunteers have what they need to do the job that they've asked to be able to do. As a staff member, if I go on a call, I tend to get yelled at by my volunteers because they want to go on the call. So it's pretty funny, yeah.
Well, let's not accommodate those people.
No, yeah.
100 years of American Red Cross.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting. You got a celebration planned.
100 years, yes. The Red Cross 2017 marks 100 years of the American Red Cross being in Alaska. Juneau was the original charter, so we had the original chapter here, and as such, it's only appropriate that we kind of kick off the year down here. So in February 17th, we will be having our 100 years of Flirting with Disaster fundraiser and celebration at the Elizabeth Pradovich Hall. We're very excited because we just got confirmation that Governor Walker, being a long time, his family, a long time Alaskans, has agreed to be our keynote speaker. About the importance of the Red Cross to the state and the state's history through the many disasters that we've had here. We're just looking forward to it, and it'll be a nice night, and hopefully people will come out, because I would hate to have the governor appear for speaking and nobody's there, so please come. You can get tickets through the Jack or her side books or Rainbow Retreats, traditional places here in Juneau.
Now, one of the sad things about these disasters is that a lot of them could be prevented.
Yes. A lot of disasters can be prevented. You know, there's weird things that happen, obviously, but taking precautions, you know, if you have a wood-burning stove, making sure that you don't have anything within have items within 3 to 5 feet of the stove so that, you know, you don't have them, you know, spontaneous combustion. If you have to have candles and use candles because you love candles, make sure that they're nowhere close to things that are flammable, like curtains, things that can be caught because they move in a breeze, so that there's a clear space around them. Making sure that you are using good cords, not frayed cords, when you're plugging in items. Particularly like in Fairbanks, we plug our vehicles in because it gets pretty cold. Here, you know, it's not such an issue, but you do have outdoor things plugged in, so make sure that you're using good cords, and even inside, that you're not plugging too many items into one circuit to where it shorts and goes. So there's certain precautions you can take. Don't leave if you're cooking oil in the kitchen. Don't leave the kitchen. Don't leave the area of the stove. Keep an eye on it. If you're slow cooking something, don't leave your home. You know, if you've got something like not the crock pot, but maybe something on the stovetop, you're slow cooking a stew, don't leave your home with your stove on. Things like that. Just those are precautions you can take to try and prevent a fire that could be, you know, something that could be taken dealt with quickly from destroying your home. Smoke detectors. And one of the things, the smoke detectors obviously aren't going to save your home, but they can save your life. So having good smoke alarms. Smoke alarms, most people don't realize, have a lifespan of like 7 to 10 years. So even though you might have been changing your batteries since you purchased your home 20 years ago, the smoke, and when you test it, yes, it still beeps when you change the battery, but that doesn't mean the sensors are good. So it's important to change not just the batteries, but the smoke alarms every 7 to 10 years. The Red Cross does have an opportunity where you can have us do that for you for free. All you have to do is call Kate here in the Juneau office, and her number, I can give that to you, is 209-1329. And she can set up an appointment, and she or volunteers will come to your house. We'll take a look, see how many smoke detectors do you need, make sure you have enough. We'll look at the dates on the ones you have, and we will replace or add any that you need with 10-year smoke alarms. You don't have to change your battery for 10 years, and then you just change out the entire smoke alarm in 10 years.
Laurie Wilson from the American Red Cross. Mm-hmm. What got you involved in the Red Cross?
You know, I used to work for Big Brothers Big Sisters, and I was there for several years, and then I had an opportunity to come work for the Red Cross. I did not know when I started with the Red Cross everything that the Red Cross does, because there's a lot that gets done behind the scenes that nobody sees in the media, that's support for response and disaster. And as I've been here for 2.5 years, it is absolutely feels like this is absolutely where I belong, because being able to help somebody and be that shoulder or that person that looks at somebody when they've just lost everything. I mean, absolutely everything. And their life is literally, you know, and they don't know where they're going to go or what they're going to do. To be able to be the one to put your arm around them and say, you know what, you're not alone. We're here. We're going to help you through this. And be able to do that because we have and have volunteers who our volunteers, I kid you not, I think are the most wonderful people on the face of the earth. They are the ones that get up at 2 o'clock in the morning. We have volunteers, you know, across the country there have been major disasters. We've had volunteers from all over the state of Alaska. Over 20 of our volunteers from the state of Alaska, including Southeast, have gone to disasters like Hurricane Matthew and the flooding down in Louisiana. We have volunteers down there right now doing evaluations of property damage. They leave their homes for 2+ weeks. They leave their homes, they leave their jobs, and they do it because they want to and they love it and they just want to help and they just want to serve. And so it just, it's every single day is rewarding. Every single day I get that, you know, they say your bucket full every single day, you know, and it's just knowing that what we're doing makes a difference. And so, yeah, that's what got me. That's not what got me involved, but that's certainly what keeps me here and what certainly why, even if I didn't work for the Red Cross today, I would stay as a volunteer because it's just, it's an amazing organization.
And uses a lot of volunteers. And how do people volunteer?
Yeah, we all, in the state, we only have 14 staff for the entire state of Alaska. So the work has to is done by volunteers. It's by the goodness of volunteers and the very much the generosity of donors. People think make the mistake of thinking that the Red Cross is federally funded. Very little of our money, very little, less than 10% of our money comes from any sort of government source. It comes from people like you and me making donations to the Red Cross to help those people, to help whether, and it could be me, and it could be you, it could be your neighbor, to help somebody when that horrible, unexpected thing happens. So that's where it comes from. And so, yeah, it's the donors and the volunteers that make it go on, that make us able to do the work that gets done.
How can people contact someone about volunteering?
Well, if you want to contact, you can go to redcross.org/Alaska, and on the left-hand side, there's a option for volunteer, and that will take you to the application page, and you just start the process. And we will, once you start that process, you'll get a phone call from a gentleman by the name of Peyton Stott or one of his volunteers that will identify where you want to go and what it is you want to do, and then we'll get you in touch with the right people within the state to make sure that happens.
And if people want to attend the 100-year celebration on February 17th,
yep.
How do they do that?
They can call me on my cell phone at 347-8266, or they can go to the Jack and purchase tickets through the Jack, through Hearthside Books, or through Rainbow Retreats.
Laurie Wilson, thanks a lot for coming down. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, thank you so much, Jeff, for having us. We love being here.
This is Bird Note. Winter is the season of waterfowl, when ducks and geese flock to our ponds, lakes, and bays. So let's take a moment to celebrate one of our best-known waterfowl. With his sleek white feathers and big orange bill, Donald Fauntleroy Duck was first sighted in Hollywood in 1934. Despite nearly 40 years on the big screen and more than 150 films and countless comic books to his credit, Donald's plumage has never changed. He still wears the same blue sailor suit without pants. Donald doesn't migrate, but resides year-round in Duckburg, except when a Disney adventure beckons. To our knowledge, longtime sweetheart Daisy has never made Donald a father. But he shows a strong paternal instinct for a trio of unruly nephews, and his friendships extend beyond birds to other vertebrates, such as his colleagues Mickey and Goofy.
Gosh.
Donald is famously temperamental, and even a bit lazy. He means well, but tends to get in over his head. But stubborn and committed, he somehow overcomes the odds. And that, perhaps, is why he's still loved after all these years. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
It's 45 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned into Juno Afternoon. Our next guests are Tom Cosgrove and Alita Buss here to talk about this Wednesday's Mudrooms performance.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Pretty good today. And better knowing that Mudrooms continues on.
It does continue on, and it's going to continue on Wednesday night.
Tomorrow.
At 7 p.m., Northern Light United Church. And the theme is, what is the theme this time, Alita?
Letting go.
Letting go.
As we move into a new year, letting go of the past, letting go of old relationships that are just bogging you down.
Are you projecting here?
No comment.
All right. So
who's telling?
Who's telling? Glad you asked. We've got, of course, every show we have seven people that tell a story for 7 minutes. And so on the list this time around is Justin Parrish, who you might know is a new state legislator from the Valley. We also have Mickey Leslie, who is actually, I believe, the oldest Mudroom participant at 82 years old.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Dee Longabout did it a few years ago, but I think she was only 80. So I think Mickey has got the Elder Award at this point.
She has an interesting background. Retired military, retired fish and game, adventurer. Should be good.
Yeah. And next we have Bhagavati Brahn, who I pick up as a Hindu goddess. So I'm quite...
She's named after a Hindu goddess.
No, her bio says she was a Hindu goddess. So it's more than just a name at this point. So that's kind of... That'll be fascinating. Skip Gray, who, of course, Jeff, you've worked with him for years, well-known local photographer and videographer. Interesting thing about him, his claim to fame is that he's touched both a live brown bear and Sarah Palin. So, Ryan Stanley, who's a guy that came to Juneau to play in a rock band and stayed. I don't think the rock band's still happening, but Ryan is here. Linda Buckley, who's a longtime resident and former teacher. And last but not least, we have Chris Sell, who is actually also known as Lieutenant Chris Sell of the Juneau Police Department.
She's the superstar lieutenant who has organized JPD's Year of Kindness.
That's correct. And this is a little known fact about Chris, is that she was once a television anchor.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
So who knows what she's going to give us. So that's a pretty interesting lineup. I mean, we get a Hindu goddess, a state legislature, and a... Police officer.
Legislator
and a police officer. Thank you. I'm all about multiples. I'm legislature.
Alita, what's got you involved in the story?
Sure. We charge $7 at the door this month. Proceeds all go to KTOO for continued great public broadcasting. And we sell also Rookery cookies and Copa coffee. Copa Sentinel coffee at the door. If you haven't been to a Mudrooms, it's worth showing up, and all you have to do is sit there and listen. The show lasts for about an hour and a half, and get there early to get some good seats.
Yeah, so if you don't know, if you don't really have any idea what this is, it's basically seven of your neighbors standing up and telling a story on a theme, and you learn all kinds of interesting things about your neighbors this way.
Some stories make you laugh, some stories make you cry. It's a usually good mix.
Yes.
And, Tom, you are known as a story coach.
Am I known as a story coach?
Well,
that's good to know.
You give people hints and suggestions.
Yes. If people want assistance, we'll work with them for sure. And I'm all about stories and listening to stories, and I've helped some people. And it's been really rewarding because everyone has these stories, but knowing how to, like, put a little structure to them to make them work, and it makes people more at ease to tell them because they know kind of what they're supposed to do. And And, yeah, we've had some magical results. So,
what's the first thing you tell people when they get the jitters about going in front of all those people live?
I think it's all about being prepared. The best way to calm nerves is to know what you're going to do. You know, it's not to avoid it. It's not trying to wing it. It's spending the time to be prepared. And the more prepared you are, the more centered and comfortable you are.
Alita Buss, you've told stories before.
I did. The storyboard finally convinced me. I was the last one standing who hadn't actually told a personal story in front of people. So I told a story. The theme was wildlife, and I talked about the wildlife of my domestic cat, Pippa. And it was nerve-wracking, even though I do get on stage just to introduce people each month. It's a whole different different thing to share about you and to be in front of all those people.
But ultimately, the stories we're telling, these are personal experience stories. So people are sharing things that they know well. So it isn't like something they have to memorize of something else. They're speaking from the heart to a certain extent. And a lot of these stories are, they've told stories to their friends or around the dinner table. So it's like, so I tell people, you know, just remember, it's your story. They don't know what the story is. I mean, it's coming from your heart, and as long as you're speaking from your heart, it really is kind of magical how it does all seem to work.
When was the last time you told stories?
When was the last time I told stories? Myself?
No, for a mudrooms presentation.
For a mudrooms presentation.
November?
Yeah.
Family Matters?
Family Matters, yeah. Told a story about the dinner table. I'm from a large Irish Catholic family, and some stories from about the dinner table. So it was a nice touch.
And if you want to go see some great stories and told by some of your friends and neighbors, Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock.
Wednesday evening, 7 o'clock, Northern Light United Church. Let's see what else. It costs $7, which goes directly to a charity. We are a non-entity. We have no status whatsoever. The money you pay at the door goes right to the charity that's collecting it, and which is actually really nice because there's absolutely no paperwork that the board has to do. But the downside is we can't advertise because we don't have any money, and so there's always this kind of funny thing. But all the money goes to charity. Tell you what, let's see, what else can I plug?
Let's see, our website, if you want to learn more about who we are and what we're doing, mudrooms.org is our website, and on there we have our upcoming events. So February, March, April, and May, we'll have an event each of those months. I think we're full for February and March, but we still need speakers for April. The theme is smoking.
Smoking. Now, let's plug that a second. Okay, so this is a theme that we came up with. It's a little out of the box.
I think it was Tom's idea. We're blaming Tom.
I think Scott was involved, but whatever. The thing is that smoking, and a number of people said, oh, this is about marijuana. I'm like, no, we made this decision before that. And so smoking, yeah, are you hot? Were you hot? Did you think you were hot?
But we want to maybe get some of the people who have started marijuana businesses here in town talking about that process. That's a story. We're breaking ground here in Alaska on that front, and that would fit the smoking theme.
Is that April?
That's April.
Okay.
And then this the week after Folk Fest. And then May's theme is subsistence and survival, and we still need stories for that.
And we know there's lots of people out there with subsistence and survival stories.
Linda, what keeps you involved in this story?
Good question, Jeff. I just love it. Every month is such a pleasure to hear these personal stories. I feel like it connects me to people in the community on another level that I don't normally. It's non-controversial. It's kind of this human thing that it's not political. People can't get worked up about it. It's just, you know, connecting people in that very human way.
Raising money, giving money to charities, and doing it all through stories. It is. It's like motherhood and apple pie, and it's a very positive event.
Could you remind us of the tellers at this next coming positive event?
Yeah, the tellers, we've got Justin Parrish, Mickey Leslie, Bhagavati Brown, Skip Gray, Ryan Stanley, Linda Buckley, and Lieutenant Chris Sell.
$7 at the door.
$7 at the door.
Tomorrow, January 11th, Wednesday night, Northern Light Church.
Our recipient for the charity is K2, who has been kind to us here, letting us use their facilities and equipment over the years. So, yeah, come on up.
Rebroadcasting our stories, KTO has been a huge Mudroom supporter, and we're forever grateful.
And we're grateful to you folks, too.
We take care of each other.
Anything you want to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I think we about covered it.
You should come by.
Yeah,
thanks, Jeff.
Get your tickets for the KTOO and Taku Fisheries Seafood Festival on January 28th at Centennial Hall with Breezen, Salt, The Rookery, Saffron, Twilight Cafe, TK McGuire's, Coconut Thai Cafe, and V Cellador serving seafood at its best. Specialty desserts and a beer tasting with the Alaskan Brewing Company complete this culinary celebration benefiting KTOO. Tickets at ktoo.org. The Seafood Festival is brought to you with sponsorship support from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute and Pacific Seafood Processors Association.
It's a couple minutes before the hour, and you are tuned in to afternoon. Coming up at 5 o'clock on KTOO, President Obama gives his farewell address. Well, the forecast for tonight, mostly clear skies with lows around 15 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, a 30% chance of snow after 3, mostly sunny skies with high temperatures of 28 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday night, snow likely mainly after 3 a.m. Forecast for Thursday, snow highs near 33 degrees. And tomorrow at 3 o'clock on a June afternoon, we're feeded at 4 in KRNN and a bit of online. KTO.org. Tune in for Andy Klein. Be here to talk about Beer Week. Joy Lyon and Jordan Niger will be here to discuss the screening of the film Resilience. We'll get the details of KRNN Spotlight Series concerts, Gambled and the High Cost of Living, and get an update on Eagle Crest.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in Dallas.